I'm Charlie Wilmoth.
I'm David Todd.
And welcome to the Bucks Dugout Podcast. Welcome back to the Bucks Dugout Podcast. Here with David Todd. And David, we're about to start the final game of the Diamondbacks series as we're taping this late on Wednesday afternoon. But we're still reeling a little bit from a very crazy game Tuesday night in which we had, first we had Jeff Carson's batting in the top of the second inning while Jared Hughes was warming up. And then Hughes came in the second due to Carson's having a sore shoulder. We then had some very strange decisions by Clint Hurdle late in the game, basically small balling his way out of an inning in the seventh. And then in the eighth, making some very strange decisions with not putting in somebody who can hit a left-hander against the side-widening Joe Patterson. And yet, maybe what was strangest about all of this is that the Pirates produced a bunch of offense despite this. It seems like the bats finally came alive last night.
Yeah, Charlie, good stuff. A really nice win for the Pirates last night. We've been hard on them, and I think justifiably so. They haven't produced anything offensively here through the first 10 games of the season. They go into the game last night 3-7 against Ian Kennedy, 21-4, fourth in the Cy Young voting in the National League. Mm-hmm. Have to tell you, Carson's gets hit hard. The Pirates put, it looked just like the game the night before, where the Pirates get three hits in the first inning. They get a run after two outs. Same thing last night after Presley and McLouth make outs. Hits by McCutchen, Walker, and Garrett Jones. Those three guys, big nights for them. 10 hits between them in 14 at bats. Couldn't ask for more out of the middle of your lineup. And so they get a run. And then, unfortunately, as you said, Carstens goes out and he gets just rocked. And two runs, it's 2-1 Arizona, and then it's just a question of how much are they going to win by. Well, it was nice last night. The tide changed. The Pirates put together 13 hits and some good stuff. And as you said, some really odd things going on. But in terms of the positives, Andrew McCutchen really off to a nice start, not showing a ton of power. Look, you're not going to get a lot of RBIs if guys aren't in base in front of you, but he's hitting the ball hard. A really nice start for him that I think, because of the offensive woes, is probably being underplayed. Neil Walker hit the ball hard the past two nights, got three hits last night. Good stuff. Good to see him stinging the ball. I'm not the biggest Neil Walker fan. I've been a bit hard on him, probably harder than I should be. I don't have high expectations, but a couple nice games from him. And Garrett Jones, the home run, hit a bunch of balls hard. That's what you like to see. And Garrett Jones up there against right-handed pitching, when he is on, he's as good as anybody. But losing Carson's hurts. Here's my unpaid doctor diagnosis, and I'm going to tell you, a strained shoulder for Jeff Carson's with inflammation, with the kind of breakdown he had at the end of last year after all those innings, I'll tell you, I'm pretty concerned. I looked at Ross Ohlendorf last year when he went out for the season after his second start, and the Pirates were talking about 2 to 3 weeks, 2 to 4 weeks. Ross was very comfortable that he'd be back, mid-May at the latest. I just, when you have that shoulder issue and he had it the year before, I just thought that was kind of a pipe dream and thought, we might never see Ross Ohlendorf in a Pirates uniform again. Mm-hmm. Kind of the way it went at the end of the season, maybe some people wish they hadn't, but just made a couple appearances at the end of the year, and now he's in Pawtucket pitching for the Red Sox. I'm afraid that we have seen the end of Jeff Carson's as a starter. Now, look, this is – I'm just giving you some opinions here, but – they have A.J. Burnett coming back in the next week or so. Brad Lincoln is up now because Carstens has gone on the DL. And I think what they'll have, because of the way the bullpen is constructed, they don't have a guy to be a swingman or a spot starter on the major league roster now as it was constituted last night. And so Carstens is a guy who, if this really is shoulder inflammation, and I would say that that's always means at least a month. Because they're going to shut him down probably for 2 weeks, and then it's going to be at least 2 weeks to build up the arm strength to get back and pitch at the major league level. I think what you'll see is Jeff Carstens goes to the bullpen, and he'll be the occasional spot starter. But I think his days of being a guy in the rotation are probably done. It's unfortunate. He was great last year, totally unexpected. But that's my guess as to how things play out. So, but before I get on to some of the other things in the game, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean that's I don't you don't want to say that it's never going to happen that Carson's is never going to come back and start again. I mean, pitchers especially have such weird career arcs that you never really know. But for the foreseeable future, I think you're right. I mean, a shoulder injury like that is never good. His velocity was also a little bit off last night. It sounds like what's going to happen is that they've called up Brad Lincoln to take his place. It sounds like Lincoln is going to be available, and I guess this podcast probably is not going to be published until after the game starts. But it sounds like he'll probably be available today and in long relief, which is going to make some sense with all the innings the bullpen had to pitch yesterday. For today at least, Brad Lincoln's your swing man, but after that, I don't know.
Yeah, Charlie, I'll make a bet that today, if James McDonald doesn't make it through seven,
right? Brad Lincoln, if he doesn't make it through seven, right?
So when James McDonald doesn't get to the seventh,
right?
I guarantee you 100%, Brad Lincoln will be the first guy out of the pen because it's his day to throw. This would be his scheduled start.
That's right. He pitched on Friday in Indianapolis.
Friday. Yeah. So
it's today. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's going to pitch next Tuesday. So I think, they will try to get him work no matter what. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he pitched the seventh inning. I would tell you, I honestly wouldn't be shocked if he pitched the eighth inning. I really think that would constitute McDonald going seven, which is unlikely. So you're going to see Brad Lincoln today is what I'm going to tell you. But then getting back to this, what was going on in the game, we saw Carstens bat for himself with Hughes up. I'm guessing that they might have had an idea about Carstens even when he was in the pen or maybe even before he made his start because he went through that first inning, they get Hughes up, and they have Carstens bat. Now, I give Clint Hurdle a little bit of credit here because you and I talked about it off air, and it seemed like a really odd decision because Carstens obviously didn't get hurt in his at bat. The question is, would you have been better off batting James McDonald or somebody like that if you didn't want to burn a pinch hitter? And it turned out that it was good to maybe have some of the pinch hitters later in the game. But what I might have done is had James McDonald or somebody else bat there. But that's neither here nor there versus some of the crazy decisions he made later in the game.
Right.
And let's just fast forward to seventh inning. You talked about the small ball stuff, Presley bunting. I mean, Alex Presley, he does a lot of things well, but I feel like he's a guy who should have every fundamental down. He's got to square and put that ball down. Bad bunt, bad decision, because you got Andrew McCutchen on deck who's hitting it. Walker's hitting. Jones is hitting. You got the guys who are hitting coming up.
You've got McLouth on deck, actually, but McCutchen's after that.
I'm sorry. Yes, you have because Tabata was in the nine hole, right? And so you have that going on. I didn't like the decision, but you knew he was going to bunt. You knew we weren't going to like the decision. So that's kind of water under the bridge for kind of every game that we watch with Hurdle. Then Tabata slides into second base, and I watched this about five different times. If he slides head first, he's safe by the length of his arm. If he can slide into the right side of the bag and slide head first, he's safe by the length of his arm. He goes in feet first and basically doesn't reach for the bag. He slows down. It's one of the worst slides I've ever seen, and it's like he'd never slid into second base on a stolen base before. I was really disappointed in that, and it's a fundamental thing. And these fundamental things like Tabata stealing third the other night with two outs where a good throw would have gotten him, these are the things that bother me. Tabata's got to go in there. I'm not saying he needs to slide head first, but it certainly made a difference of him being safer out. The Pirates get nothing that inning. But in the eighth inning, I don't get it at all.
Right.
Clint Hurdle's a guy who loves the double switch. He clearly is playing the platoon. I mean, we're seeing it at first and third. We've seen it sometimes in the outfield. So, he is a guy who's living by the platoon, and yet in the eighth inning, after a McCutchen single, a great bunt by Neil Walker, and I'll ask you this, I don't know if you saw this bunt, but Walker laid a bunt down the third base line. It was not a sacrifice bunt. He was bunting for a hit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if Hurdle told him to go up there and bunt, and he said, okay, on the first one, I'll try to bunt for a hit, and then I will sacrifice after that. I don't know the answer to that, but it was a great bunt, and I just I think guys should have that in their repertoire. A good move. I'd be curious to know the answer, and we're not going to know the answer. But so now you got guys on first and second, no outs, and here comes Garrett Jones. And as you said, you got a side winding lefty on the hill in Joe Patterson. What do you do?
It's tough. I mean, I'm inclined to cut. The right move is to pinch hit for him. I'm inclined to give Hurdle a little bit of slack though. Just because Jones had been hitting the ball so well earlier in the game. So at least there's a reason there. But if you actually watch the at-bat, I mean, he's taking these silly swings on fastballs that are coming outside. And, you know, I mean, I don't think it was a good decision. But then, you know, two batters later, to have Alvarez, you know, then coming up against Patterson, that's just so ridiculous. And it seems like, man, that's just such a great chance that they're just blowing on a guy who, I checked this earlier, Patterson has a career split. He has a, you know, he gives up a career 548 OPS against lefties. So, you know, I don't really know what they're doing there.
Yeah, did you see his right-handed split, just out of curiosity?
It is 776.
Okay.
With a 403 OBP.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean, it's absolutely – it is a ridiculously bad decision. Ridiculously bad. I tweeted I wasn't tweeting the whole game. I didn't want to tweet. I was out with some friends, but I couldn't help myself. And I just tweeted that, you know, it might be the worst managed game that I've seen Hurdle manage after watching 173 games now. Inexplicable to me why you got a chance. You have one of your guys who's been your best hitter, one of your best hitters on the bench in Casey McGee. You probably, for defensive purposes, want him in there at first or third, maybe even for the last two innings anyway. Mm-hmm. And you don't use him. And they end up using him in the ninth inning, and he gets a hit and whatever.
Yeah.
It's just – I just do not understand the logic there, and I was really annoyed. And then, of course, on the second batter, that Grilly, who again had great stuff, he did make a bad pitch this time, though, unlike the pitch maybe to Andre Ether in L.A. And McDonald roped the fastball out, and the Pirates were tied at four. And much to their credit, as they did all game, they came back, Andrew McCutchen – singled on another soft fly ball, and Alex Presley scored, and the Bucks win the game, and a really nice job by Juan Cruz again. On the pitching side, the couple things that just jump out at me is how novel a different guy can get the final three outs. So hopefully Clint took notice there. You know, Juan Cruz could do it. Again, curious as to why he flipped Grilly and Cruz. I mean, Grilly's his eighth inning guy, so he didn't want to move two guys out of their role. He thinks crazy stuff like that. So, you know, I'm sure he's thinking, well, Grilly's an eighth inning guy, so I'll just keep him in the eighth inning, and I only have to move Cruz. And if I move Cruz to the eighth and Grilly to the ninth, then each guy's in a different role. I mean, is insane as that sounds. I'm sure that's what Hurdle was thinking. And then Evan Meek. At the time, we didn't know why Meek was coming in instead of Juan Cruz at that point in time. Turns out Hanrahan's day-to-day with a tight hamstring. Looks like he'll be out of action until at least Friday. And the two thoughts here is, one, the two guys, Chews and Watson, did a really nice job, a very good job by Tony Watson in particular. I love the way he's throwing the ball right now. But for Meek, maybe this is a bit of redemption. He got a chance to pitch in a higher leverage situation. He did a good job. It looked like he had a little more life on the ball, and he was able to pitch back-to-back days. So maybe there's a silver lining out of that came out of this whole thing last night, that Meek did pitch that inning. And so I can't remember exactly what the last thought was, Charlie, but generally the impression, more good work out of the bullpen. Unfortunate for Carstens. Lincoln coming up, he gets maybe a chance for him to prove what he has again. Maybe he'll turn out to be Jeff Carstens of this year, just like when Ohlendorf went down, Carstens got a chance to step in and do something good. So looking for silver linings with Carstens going down, maybe those are it. We see something from Meek. We will see something from Lincoln. Like I said, I think he'll go today. But really the positive is the bats were going last night against a good pitcher in a good hitting park, and we'll see if they can keep it going today against Dan Hudson.
Right. Well, we better cut it short here, and the reason is that we've got a special guest for you today. Jennifer Langosch is going to come on and talk about the Cardinals after the break. Charlie Womuth here with David Todd. You're listening to the Bucks Dugout Podcast, and we have a very special guest for you today, Jennifer Langosch, who is now the MLB.com reporter for the St. Louis Cardinals. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Jen, congratulations on your move to St. Louis. I know you went to college or journalism school in Missouri. Tell us about how the transition came about. And if you will, you know, Charlie and I feel a little bit like Winnie the Pooh with the honeypot here. spending so much time with the Pirates, and we know that you saw regime change with the Pirates, you saw managerial change with the Pirates. Tell us your first impressions of the Cardinals organization and how you would compare and contrast the two.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the move, I had obviously been in Pittsburgh for 5 years, had actually settled down there, bought a house last year. This fall, the opportunity came up to move to St. Louis, and as you mentioned, I did have some roots here, having gone to college here, having a lot of professional contacts here. I just looked at it as another professional opportunity to come out and kind of move also a little bit closer to family. So that's what brought me to St. Louis. In terms of just the organization, as you mentioned, I went through a lot of transition in Pittsburgh, and I think that was the biggest contrast coming here to St. Louis, is the continuity that this organization has had. And ironic enough, probably their biggest period of transition in the last 16 years was this winter when I came in, with Tony La Russa obviously leaving, Dave Duncan following him a few months later, and then obviously Albert Pujols heading out west. So, you know, it's an interesting year to kind of gauge the public reaction to all these changes when, you know, we saw it in Pittsburgh year after year. But, you know, there are differences in how this team is run that I've noticed just in my couple months on the beat. There's expectations here that you probably saw that you didn't see in Pittsburgh, things that Pirate fans might have hoped for, Cardinal fans expect. So some differences there, and so far I've enjoyed my stay out in St. Louis.
Let me just follow up with, do you notice any difference in the attitude of the Clint was obviously a very engaging, personable guy, but do you know and notice any difference in the attitude of the organization toward both media and the fans?
You know, it's been interesting. Mike Matheny, the new manager here in St. Louis, it's kind of, I guess I'll say it's been a learning process for him thus far. I mean, obviously he played here in St. Louis, so he kind of knew what to expect in terms of media responsibilities. It was, to be honest with you, it was a little shaky at first in spring, just kind of evasive on information, which is something we saw a lot in Pittsburgh, so it was probably not confined to just one team. You know, very delicate in terms of handing out information, very much a player's manager that's going to protect his players and not try to say too much. So, you know, actually in those respects, it's been kind of similar in terms of how they deal with the media. Obviously here there's a lot more media requests, a lot more demand, and again, as I mentioned, a lot more expectation, just because not only where they were last year, but where they've been for so many years before that.
Now that we're a couple weeks into the season, how do you think the fans are doing with the transition the organization is going through? And I assume that the departure of Pujols will be the biggest part of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so far it's been great. This team is right now 8-3, leading the NL Central already by 3 games, and they're in a stretch of 27 straight games against division opponents. Many of those against the Pirates, the Astros, the Cubs. Opportunity here in St. Louis for the Cardinals to kind of distance themselves early. You know, Pujols is still a very conflicting figure here. There are some people who realize what he did for this organization for 11 years, thankful for that, and actually thankful that he didn't stay here and kind of handcuff the organization by taking that much money, you know, over the next 10 years. There are others that the minute you mention his name, if I write a story that has him and Albert Pujols, I get hate mail. They just don't want to hear that the guy ever existed here. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if those feelings kind of simmer and die down. I think there are some people here that are getting a little bit of satisfaction by the poor start that Albert's having in California, you know, hoping that maybe he sees the grass wasn't actually greener on the other side. But I think over time, the city will look back at what Albert did for this franchise and look at him with respect. And I at least hope so. I mean, I hope when his playing career is over that he's welcomed here, just like all the Hall of Famers that we saw here over the weekend through their opening ceremonies, and that Pujols will eventually again be embraced.
Is the attitude very similar? Is the attitude very positive in terms of Tony La Russa? Was he there for the ring ceremony? And because he retired and didn't go to another organization, are there warm feelings toward him?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's been received especially warm. He showed up a few times during spring training, really tried to stay under the radar, didn't want Matheny to feel kind of overshadowed by his presence. He was down in Miami for opening day down there a few weeks ago, and then he was here in St. Louis over the weekend for the home opener. So he and Dave Duncan actually both were in attendance for that. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that he retired, he didn't jump ship to go to another organization, I think helps. But this is a guy who brought winning baseball to St. Louis, and I think that respect will always be there, and Tony will always be thought of very fondly, I think, in this area.
You talked about the string of games that the Cardinals are playing against division opponents. The Pirates haven't really seen anybody within the division, but you've already played, the Cardinals have already played the Brewers, the Reds, the Cubs. What are your impressions of the rest of the division and the Cardinals' ability to compete against those teams?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I felt like we heard a lot about the Reds and the Cardinals division-wise, the Reds and the Cardinals this spring and how those two teams would probably be up at the top toward the end of the year. I wouldn't underestimate the Brewers. I mean, obviously they lost Prince Fielder. They added Aramis Ramirez. Yes, he's not Prince Fielder, but if he can have a bounce-back type year, that lineup is fairly similar to what it was last year, and their pitching is good. They have a very solid rotation. They have a very strong bullpen, so I don't think they're to be overlooked. Yes, they probably took a step back, but I don't know if it's as significant a step back as everyone assumed. The Reds, to this point, haven't played the Cardinals all that well. I still think that they're built to contend for the rest of the year. The Cubs have a ways to go, and it's going to be a rebuilding year there in Chicago. Just they had one game where their offense broke out against the Cardinals, but otherwise pretty quiet the last two games, and you can tell they're still missing a lot of pieces. So, I mean, I think it comes as no surprise with basically what everybody has predicted for months, but it does look like the Cardinals, the Brewers, and the Reds at this point are a notch above everybody else in the Central.
Yeah, I was listening to the Cardinals-Reds radio broadcast last night, and there were incessant updates on the Brewers games. On the Brewers game, obviously they were playing the Reds, but there were almost no updates from the Pirates game. So the perception in St. Louis seems to be that this is basically already a three-team race.
Yeah, it is. I mean, to be honest with you, though, there were several players, especially toward the end of spring when you started talking about looking at the division, that brought up the Pirates, you know, and called them pesky and mentioned how they did last year. So, you know, I wouldn't say that the Pirates have no respect out here, but until the Pirates win on a consistent basis, yeah, they're not going to look at as the same level of competition as Milwaukee and Cincinnati.
Jen, you obviously knew about the St. Louis team, having, you know, covered them with the Pirates a bunch of times, and then you're working the playoffs and those types of things. In terms of being there now on a daily basis, what strikes you as being different than what you expected coming into the season or coming into the job in the spring?
Yeah, I don't know if much is that different. I mean, one of the things that stood out to me this spring is how tight this clubhouse is. And this isn't to say that the clubhouse in Pittsburgh wasn't, but there's just something different here. When you walk in and you watch how these guys interact with each other, how much they enjoy being around each other. And as I mentioned earlier, you just walk in and there's a feeling of expectation that wasn't there in Pittsburgh because it couldn't be there in Pittsburgh based on where they have been the last two decades. You know, so that kind of stood out. I don't know if anything else really surprised me about this group. I think the one thing to watch about the Cardinals team, the way they're built this year, is health. And I know health is always a question for all 30 teams, but I think it's especially true here in St. Louis where you look at a lot of their key pieces. They're guys in their mid-30s who are at that point where they become a little bit fragile. Some have already shown to be this season, and that their career starts to decline. So, you know, that could be the Achilles heel of this team if there is one, is the health aspect. Can Lance Berkman, can Rafael Furcal, can Carlos Beltran stay healthy? You know, how long is Chris Carpenter out? Those are kind of question marks that, you know, if these guys aren't healthy, all of a sudden it tests the depth of the organization, and I'm not sure that the depth at the major league level is here within the Cardinals to be able to sustain several injuries if that's what's to occur.
Yeah, John, I always found it interesting when people talk about the Cardinals offseason. Obviously, the thing they want to talk about is Albert Pujols leaving. But when you add Carlos Beltran and Adam Wainwright, you know, I could make a pretty reasonable argument. I think that the team is, on par with the team that they had last year. How has Beltran fit in, and how has Wainwright looked coming back from missing last season?
Yeah, I mean, Beltran to this point has been healthy. He hit another home run last night, his fourth of the season. At this point, he's been hitting up in the two hole. I'm curious to see if that's going to change just because of the power he's shown. When the guy, his swing is effortless, just watching him here on a regular basis, he still very much has it if he can stay healthy, and there's just those questions about his achy knees. You look at this Cardinals lineup, and this is something that players noted early this spring, a lot of them think it's deeper than the lineup was last year, even with Albert in that. And that's not to say that Carlos is going to directly replace Albert's production, But when you add in a guy like David Freese, who had a breakout year last year, when Alan Craig gets healthy in a couple weeks and you add him back in there, when you look at Yadier Molina and the offensive numbers that he's beginning to put up that he didn't put up early in his career, all of a sudden you look at this lineup 1-8, it's pretty tough to go through. So, you know, I don't think they necessarily took a step back in terms of offensive potential. Again, it's a matter of whether these guys in that lineup can stay healthy. As for Wainwright, he had such a tremendous spring and such an easy, relatively speaking, rehab process that I think the expectations on him were probably unrealistic in terms of him coming back and being the Adam Wainwright of 2009, 2010. We saw on Friday when he got lit up by the Cubs, it's still a process. You know, the velocity isn't where it was pre-surgery yet. The crispness of his pitches aren't there. The command isn't there. And the Cardinals are worried that the stamina won't be there late in the year. So, you know, while I think he will boost this rotation, I think it's a little too much to expect him to come back in the, you know, Cy Young-type form that we saw him before he got hurt.
One key to the Cardinals' hot start so far actually has been the performances by a lot of role players and guys making sort of unexpected contributions. One of those has been Lance Lynn, who the Pirates are going to face in this series. What has been the key for him so far?
Yeah, I mean, and Lance is an interesting case. You look at him, he's a former first-round pick, a guy who is going to be the setup man in this bullpen this year, only because the Cardinals entered the year with five established starters. Chris Carpenter goes down in spring. They ask Lance to start extending himself out. He did so. I mean, this is a guy who throws harder than anybody else in this rotation. He sits consistently 93 to 95 all the way through an outing, four pitches to work with. You know, I think some people are surprised by the early success that he had. You won't find the Cardinals saying that because they knew that this guy had such potential. Again, the only reason he wasn't in the rotation to begin with was because there was no rotation spot available. So, I mean, if he is able to kind of sustain what he's done this far, they're going to miss, yes, they're going to miss Chris Carpenter, but they're going to be able to kind of weather the storm during his absence, which at this point looks like it could be several months into the year. So, you know, Lance is a guy to look out for. He obviously had a very good October last year, had a nice little summer when he came up, made his debut. And he's a guy who's going to probably be in this rotation very much long term.
Jen, you talked a little bit about Mike Matheny and his relationship outside the organization and being a player's manager. Tell us a little bit about his tactical managerial tendencies. We know Tony La Russa was to the point of being mocked for the number of changes, bullpen moves he would make, the types of things he would do. Matheny, being a catcher, lived through that under La Russa. Do you see much of the same? Can you see an obvious La Russa influence, or is he his own man and doing things a little differently?
Yeah, you can definitely see glimpses of Tony in terms of specifically the matchup type things. I think the one thing that Tony did so well during his time here was he managed to find a way to put players in positions where they would succeed. And I'm talking players that were role-type guys, players who probably who didn't have as much success elsewhere. Tony managed to find a way for them to do well here. And, you know, that's something that, you know, does Mike have that touch? Does he have that understanding of how to use guys to put them in the best position to succeed? I don't know. We haven't seen him there yet. And it's also been interesting because the Cardinals have won so many games early this year by fairly wide margins that there really hasn't been much of an opportunity to manage or to second-guess Mike's decision. The one thing that I found interesting in spring, something that I never saw in Pittsburgh, was Mike managed to win spring games. And that's not to say that he would sacrifice the preparation that the pitchers in particular needed to get ready for the season. But he made pitching changes in the eighth and ninth inning in spring games to play to matchups. He would send up a pitch hitter. The other team make a pitching change, he'd send up a different pitch hitter. That's something that you usually don't see happen in spring games since guys are just trying to get their work. Mike's philosophy is that winning, you condition yourself to winning, whether that's spring training or whether that's a game in October. He wants his guys to be focused on winning, even when it's a game that didn't count.
Jen, do you think he was practicing for himself?
You know what, I think so. I think so because he has no managerial experience. You know, you talk about him being a first-year manager. Well, he's a first-year manager in all respects. I mean, his previous managerial experience was Little League. So, yeah, I mean, I think part of it was to get his mind thinking matchups, thinking numbers, thinking how would I do this in the regular season so he was ready when April came around.
That'll be an interesting thing to follow next spring to see if he does the same things.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And you know, and I think he altered it, too, as the spring went on, because early he started holding some of his better relievers for late-inning situations, getting them accustomed to, you know, pitching in the 7th, 8th, and 9th like they would during the year. Well, he had a couple situations where there ended up not being a 9th inning for them to pitch, so they didn't get their work. And you also look at, you know, who are the hitters coming up in those final 3 innings. It's usually a lot of minor leaguers. Is that the best way for your best pitchers to get their work in? Probably not. But for the most part, he's stuck to that in trying to actually win games.
Besides the expectations, what are the big differences between Pirates fans and Cardinals fans in your estimation?
You know, the passion was always there in Pittsburgh, and I will never deny that the Pirates fans are passionate. I mean, I just think the biggest difference is volume of interest. You know, I just look at, I essentially am doing the same job here in St. Louis that I did in Pittsburgh. I look at the number of emails that I get. I look at the number of hits I get on my blog, and it's 3-4, sometimes 5 times the amount that I got in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
And again, I'm not doing my job any differently. So, you know, the passion of Pirates fans was tremendous, and it's one of the things that stuck out to me during my 5 years there in Pittsburgh. But just the number, the sheer interest, it's like Steeler Nation here. I mean, baseball in St. Louis is what the Steelers are in Pittsburgh. It's just life. You know, the Blues are playing hockey playoff games right now. I think more people watch the Cardinals games than they do the hockey games. That's just how it is here.
Well, Jen, we know you got a bunch of things to do, so we'll let you go. But before we wrap things up, anything you're missing about Pittsburgh and looking forward to this weekend when you get back?
Oh, well, I'm going to make my trip to the Strip District, that's for sure, and get some fresh food. I'm looking forward to seeing PNC Park. And you know what? And the thing I miss most right now are the people in Pittsburgh. I think I mentioned this on Twitter the other day, to send Pittsburgh to its end here in St. Louis from people who say, oh, you know, you must like it much better here. I absolutely loved my 5 years in Pittsburgh. I love the people, love the city, the culture, the sports town that it was. So just looking forward to kind of seeing people in the press box, seeing PNC Park again, and also going over to the Pirates clubhouse and saying hi to some old friends.
Well, unfortunately, I won't be in town this weekend, but have a great time, and I'll look forward to seeing you when you're back in town, and I'm sure we'll get you on again.
Yeah, the nice thing about staying in the division is I'm guaranteed 2-3 trips a year to Pittsburgh.
Thanks for joining us. That was Jennifer Langosch, the Cardinals beat writer now. You can find her work at cardinals.com. You can also find her on Twitter at twitter.com/LangoschMLB. Thanks for listening to the Bucks Dugout Podcast. For David Todd, I'm Charlie Wilmoth. Find us on Twitter. David's at DT on Pirates. I'm at Bucks Dugout. And leave us your comments.